And welcome back, True Believers. Comics Weekend here at the Pittsburgh International Comics Festival. That's right, the Pittsburgh International Comics Festival, not the Pittsburgh Independent Comics Festival. We're sitting here with Mr. James Rugg. Mr. James Rugg, better known as Jimmy. Jim Rugg. Sitting here, holding back the fans trying to claw their way at his table. Sitting here drawing, what are you drawing, Jim? I think that's Nova. You're drawing a Nova.
Yeah.
You're drawing a Nova. See, True Believers? Even in moments of rest, Jim Rugg always working. Hardest man in show business. Mr. Jim Rugg, what do you have to say, Jim, for the fans at home?
Not too much. Saving myself for my throng of fans.
At the panel. We're doing this panel for the blog, Jimmy.
What's the subject?
We're going to be talking about the varied and multitude of the multitude of companies that we've all worked for and how we've managed to survive all these years doing comics. How do we do it? How do we surf this raging torrent of interest in comic books for the future?
Do you mean emotionally or financially? How do we do it?
I think those two things go hand in hand, don't you, Jim?
They influence each other. I don't know if they go hand in hand.
Well, Kevin and I were talking about this last night. You know, the Strange Tales job that we both got was probably the best professional experience I've ever had and the best paying. And it makes me think a lot about, like, you know, wanting to, you know, do work to get paid for. You know, I'm kind of tired of doing work not getting paid for anything. How do you feel about that, Jim?
I think it was my best-paying job, too, probably. Yeah, it was a good experience, but it's such an atypical one. If you were actually working on, like, X-Men or Iron Man, it wouldn't be the same as Strange Tales was. You know what I mean? Like, we were allowed to kind of just make comics, get paid for doing whatever we wanted for four pages. But if you were 22, it would be more of a grind, you know, a lot of stupid revisions, you know, to fit into some storyline that's planned next year, I think. I don't know.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I think it's interesting. Yeah, it's like it's a joy to be able to do a riff on those characters. But then, you know, talking to Tom about doing Godland month in and month out, you know, after how many years? I mean, he's been doing this like 5 years now.
Yeah,
so like he's done. He's ready to move on. So yeah, he got paid out of the collections from what I understand. It's not the same as, you know, getting $500 a page at Marvel, you know. How do you feel about that, Jim?
I bet if you worked for Marvel for like 2 years that you would then be like, oh, I want to do my own stuff for free that I can do whatever I feel like doing, you know. And probably that's probably what Tom's feeling now, is like wanting to do ideas.
And Tom Scully is bursting out of the gate with his work, American Barbarian. You can read it online, ambarb.com. Ambarb Tom. Isn't that right, Tom? Yes, Todd. Tom is nodding in approval. He's actually not paying attention to me. I was very seriously drawing some sort of cosmic grackle.
New Gods number 12, I think he's working on.
The fake Kirby style. The fake Kirby style that Tom is working on. I don't understand. What is this fake Kirby thing that he's doing? I mean, he's literally calling it fake Kirby. What is that?
Is that what he calls it?
Oh, it's on his blog. It says, like, I'm up to fake Kirby number 3.
Yeah, it's pretty great. He's continuing New Gods, and he's doing it in the pencil style of, like, the Jack Kirby collector.
But is he picking up from the New Gods Baxter 1986 wrap-up where Dark Side wins?
I don't think. I think he's picking up directly from issue 11 from the 70s.
Whoa, so he's going back in time.
Ending. He's doing the original ending. I don't know what you would call it.
Here comes Mr. Cornwell with a question. Yes, Mr. Cornwell. Oh, for the Lane Mill. Oh, somebody wants to buy that?
Yeah.
$2. Yeah. Lane Milburn Cold Heat Special purchase in progress. But Lane, I have to tell you, I ripped off the covers of your Cold Heat Special because no one knows that it is a color mini comic inside because you did a black and white cover. So as cool as that was, I had to rip off those covers because, you know what, nobody they don't pick it up because there's no color on the cover there. So yeah.
For like 10 minutes, I thought about doing the same cover, uh-huh. different interiors.
Wait, hold on. So did we make that sale or no, Chris? Chris, yes to the sale or no? Oh, okay, Miss, would you like it? Please, just take it. It would be yes, please, yes. Yes, you're welcome. Lane Milburn, I gave that one away. So I just want you to know, Mr. Milburn, you owe me $2.
You should talk to Renee at some point, the librarian.
From the Carnegie? Yeah, I talked to him.
I'm a big advocate of that.
You're a big advocate of libraries being involved in comic books.
Yeah, just in library preservation, I feel like they're kind of in a similar boat as us, you know? They're affected by all this changing climate.
Well, they had a BJ and the Dogs. You can check out BJ and the Dogs from the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh, True Believers. That is how forward there is. That is the graphic novel mania that is happening here in Pittsburgh. You have to understand that that's how what high pitch level there is of mania here for comic books.
It's a fervor in their graphic novel department.
Here comes Kevin Huizenga wearing a very similar shirt than Mr. Rugg. They did not look at the memos this morning. They have very similar look today. Even blue jeans and a dark shoe. There is in sandy colored hair. They could be mistaken for brothers today here in Pittsburgh, ladies and gentlemen. Sun is shining. A cool 53 degrees. Spotty skies. We're on the sixth floor of a building here in the Strip District of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Luckily, it is not the Pittsburgh Pirates are not in the World Series race. But tomorrow we're going to have some Pittsburgh Steelers football traffic that we're going to have to contend with. If you're still listening at this point, God bless you, because you know the action's fast and furious here at the picks, and we're just trying to keep it interesting for you at home. And, you know, Pittsburgh Scene Report, this is what it's like to be a cartoonist here in Pittsburgh. It's me, it's Jimmy, it's Tom, it's Eddie, it's Pat, you know, Bill Boyshell, Mike Budai, Phantom of the Attic. I'm sure I'm missing people. Forgive me if you're listening to this and you're from Pittsburgh and you think, Frank doesn't know who I am. He doesn't care. But I do care. Come by Sundays, working at Copacetic. I'm making deals. So, what else you got to say to the audience at home? Let's talk more about the libraries there, Jimmy. How do you did a lecture at the library. How'd that go?
It went well. It was, I think, well attended. I don't know.
Yeah, you got some people there.
I'm just happy they have that. Like, a monthly graphic novel discussion thing. Like, man, I would have killed for that when I was 12, 14, 18. I'm pretty happy about it now.
And what would you have discussed back then, Jim?
Probably who would win in a fight, Wolverine or the Punisher, and how it's bullshit because Wolverine would kill that dude, and yet they would do those crossovers. Hey, you know what I thought of the other day? Did Frank Miller sort of contribute significantly to the Punisher's commercial success?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I mean those issues of Daredevil with the Punisher in them were the most popular. I literally remember those when those came out on the shelves, and my friends who didn't read comics wanted those because they liked the Punisher character so much.
Yeah, did anybody else make the Punisher good before that? Was that like,
well, there was that Punisher magazine. Remember that black and white magazine that Marvel had? And there was this awesome cover of the Punisher shooting some bad guys through this, like, Steranko Art Deco plate glass window thing. So the Punisher was a popular character, but I remember all of my friends in the neighborhood who didn't like comics were really into any Punisher appearances that I had. And I think that, you know, the Punisher was really popular like 82, 83, 84 before he's getting, you know, his own series, which was 87 or so. Oh, no, you know, because there was that Punisher miniseries with like Zek, and that was 84, 5, I think.
Yeah,
we're going back.
The other day.
There's most listeners for Comics are not, do even not more. Know the Mike Zek Punisher saga. Which is good. You know, why should you? Why should you care? You don't care. I mean, you know, why do you care? You shouldn't care, you know. But the only reason we care is because that's all we had to read. But, you know, you've got Chester Brown and you take him for granted. How do you feel about that, that you take Chester for granted? Have you ever read Ed the Happy Clown? No, you haven't. Because you haven't tracked down the back issues or the rare out-of-print collection. I know you haven't. I know you haven't read Love and Rockets. I know you haven't read American Flag. I know you're not interested. You just want to make up comics as you go along. You want to reinvent the wheel. You want to, you don't, you want to be free of history. History is a burden upon you, because why should you have to read all of these terrible things? You know, you should be able to paint in a vacuum. You should be able to make Cy Twombly paintings all day and be fine with it. You're a genius. You are a genius. Just put it together in comic sequential form, and it's like no one else has done it before. You are the one who's doing it. You can do it. I know you're listening. You can do it. Maybe you can be in the Abstract Comics Anthology. Maybe you can make the dream happen. Because think about it. Is there really anyone doing that kind of important work? Is anyone really investigating the serious consequences of abstract narration? I don't think there's enough people making Brackage-like comic books. We need to have more of an understanding of these uncharted lands. There's so much uncharted territory in comics. I mean, you know, it has to happen, right? You know? I mean, craft, you know, being able to draw the human figure, just who cares? Just throw it out the window. Like, who cares? We don't need to be able to draw, right? You know, you can make comics without being able to draw. Isn't that correct?
I want to start a school where it's James O'Barr, Tim Vigil, and Jim Ballant.
And Steve Bissett.
Yeah.
Get him on board for that, right?
I think he would probably guest lecture there.
I think you could talk to James Sturm about that. Come on, we're dead air, Jim. Dead air, Jim.
Yeah, I know. I realize that, the dead air conundrum. Dead air's okay. Dead air is one of those things. Didn't Howard Stern pioneer dead air a little bit?
Yeah, but he had, like, you could see breasts on radio somehow. That was a big, draw.
Although, you can see breasts in Tim Vigil art.
Yeah, Tim Vigil. You know who was a big Tim Vigil fan? This is the secret. Tom Neely. Big Tim Vigil fan.
That makes perfect sense. I can see that. I think Sammy Harcum. Maybe a little bit of a small Vigil fan. I don't know if he's a
Sammy Harcum?
Yes.
I think I can see a Tim Vigil influence in his work, don't you?
Do you remember The Crow?
Of course I remember The Crow.
So whenever that last book came out,
The Crow was a big deal. Yeah, The Crow was a big deal. I mean, I didn't, you know, I had friends that were more interested in it than I, but that's a classic success story of, you know, black and white indie, just that the fans really picked up on. And
one of the early movie things too, the idea that you're going to make money selling this crap to Hollywood.
Oh yeah, that's I think the biggest downfall of anybody in comics is that they think that, you know, they're going to turn their comic book into a screenplay and they're going to be the next Tarantino. David Lapham, anyone? Love David Lapham. Love me some Stray Bullets, but whew, you know, for a second there, you thought there was going to be like a Stray Bullets Tarantino movie in like 1998, 99, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was the best of those crime noir books, I think. I think it was definitely better than Sin City.
Oh, totally. Well, I like the pacing. I'm, you know, a big fan of The Grid, so love me some David Lapham. That was awesome.
I don't understand why that book never caught on, and I also don't understand.
What do you mean that book never caught on? That was like the biggest book of the 90s. Like, just because it was like, you know, smoke.
I think it was influential, but I don't think it ever sold well. I think it's one of those. He's like a cartoonist where, like, we all know him or whatever, but I don't think it ever sold well.
Yeah, but, you know, those things sold pretty well in the stores. It's relative. Like, we're talking, like, you know, it was probably successful with 3,000 copies. Like, you know, most comics, even in France, like, Yoko, you know, whatever. I'm not going to, like, you know, from what I understand, like, even great cartoonists like Yoganyama in France only sell around 1,000 copies. You know, it's difficult, you know, like, so if you're successful, like, yeah, it's like he wasn't so successful, but maybe he sold 3,000 to 5,000 copies in the late 90s. That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's not enough to probably live off of. I don't know. I guess if he's self-publishing, he might have made $1 a book, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah, but then you'd see those hardcovers and you just think he was, you know, doing really well, like whatever, El Capitan.
They were really pretty early on, you know, like the collections and stuff. That was one of the nicer collections early on.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Thing. He was like sort of the front of that, you know, like you would think he could have done like the Jeff Smith, you know, like Smith had that figured out early on of like putting together the collections.
Bone and Stray Bullets, very similar, you know, he's similar.
They were early on the graphic you know, the idea of collections.
Oh, here. This, I know what I want to talk about. Okay. This is what I want to talk about. Okay. So in 96, you know, in the independent comic scene, you know, the luminaries are, you know, Paul Pope, Jeff Smith, Dave Sim, okay, Chris Ware, Dan Klaus, Pete Bagg, the Hernandez brothers, Seth, Chester. Okay, so when Paul Pope, Jeff Smith, Ed Brubaker leave the fold to go mainstream, if you will, Ed starts writing Catwoman, Paul starts doing Dark Horse Presents and is doing stuff for Dark Horse and is getting paid. Jeff is still putting out Bone, but, like, you know, he's involved in the scene. But then really those guys went mainstream by 2000 when Jimmy Corrigan hit and literary comics are getting this play. Blankets comes out and there's that New York Times article in 2003, like, new comic books on the cover is Chester Brown and Art Spiegelman and Ware and Adrian and all stuff. So it's like as soon as these adventure type people in independent comics go on to quote unquote mainstream comics to be, you know, to make, you know, make a little bit more money or something, what's left of the independent comic scene is a very literary strand. So I think this whole literary comics term, you know, debuts around 2000 with Jimmy Corrigan, and then the scene reflects that because Pope and Smith and Brubaker, you know, who were the more sci-fi action adventure genre type people, genre guys, go mainstream. And then so then within the literary comics thing, I think to me that straitjackets, that term straitjackets a lot of people, and then the Kramer's art comic reaction, if you will, even though it was happening at the same time, is just, you know, it's just felt louder because in indie comics, there by 2000 weren't as many varied voices as, I mean, there were, but the adventure people left. How do you feel about that, Jim?
2000s, whenever I started making comics, and it was a graveyard. I remember going to SPX, and it was just dead. The only stuff that people were doing were mini comics. Marvel had gone through a bankruptcy or two, had been sold. Like, everything looked like it had bottomed out then. And, you know, so these guys, like Kramer's, that was what, 01, 02?
Well, yeah, the first Kramer's was like 01.
Well, not the first one, but that fourth one was the big one.
That was 03, 04.
And I was on the wall between, Top Shelf was on the left, and Kramer's was on the right. And that was the year of Blankets and Kramer's 4.
I remember that, yeah.
And whenever they opened the doors, instantly those two corners of the room were like five people deep, surrounding the table. People were passing money over the top and passing these huge, thick-ass books back. And, you know, there just wasn't much, there wasn't a big thing happening. You know, like those were such big events because up to that point, it was kind of like everybody was doing these mini comics. You know, distribution had all collapsed at that point, and the internet hadn't become this distribution model yet. So, like, there were a lot of good cartoonists, but they were kind of like working in these little vacuums. So, you know, to get, like, you know, Kevin Supermonster or whatever, you'd have to kind of know that, you know.
No, absolutely. You know, no, I know.
Shows. So, like, that's what Kramer's really, part of the explosion of that is there was the whole distribution was coming back. You know what I mean?
Well,
there were a few things that came together in that moment.
Well, what was also interesting is that people, you know, when people say Kramer's, it's like this wall or something. But really, you know, there was this long table there that year. And I remember Sammy selling Kramer's. I remember Ben Jones sitting there. I remember Souther Sol was there sitting there. Ron Rigi standing there. I think Devlin was hanging out. You know, it's like, I don't know if Chippendale was there or Brinkman was there, but, like, it was just like all the alt cartoonists of the late, you know, 90s, early 2000s. Like, Jordan, I can't remember if Jordan was there, but I just remember, like,
yeah, probably Non was probably.
Well, but
that.
I just remember. Well, Non, I remember. I remember Jordan giving Non out in, like, at an Ape in, like, 98, just, like, walking around giving Nons away. But the point is just, like, you know, when you say Blankets on one side, Kramer's on the other side, it's like, you know, that Kramer's table was 20 people, not 20 people, but 10 people, where, you know, whereas, like, you know, Craig Thompson, I mean, God love Craig Thompson, wish you all the luck in the world, but no comment.
I think there's a thing with Blankets.
I'm not talking about Blankets, we're not talking about Blankets.
All right. We won't go that direction. But what it was like comics had been building this energy, especially the alt comics, the indie stuff, had been building this energy, and Mocha was like a capital release for it. You know, like it was such a big moment. I remember hearing about Mocha from the year, I think that was the second year of Mocha, and I didn't go to the first one, but there was this, I mean, it was more than a buzz. It was like this roar of like the crowd, you know, as soon as they open the doors, the crowds are completely fill the aisles, you know, and it's New York, and it's like attractive people were there. You know, it was all these things that I had never seen before. SPX was sort of that idea, but then Mocha was really, that was it. It was in the beautiful build, you know, that was that the Puck building?
That, yeah, that was
and, Puck. You know, and it was like all this natural light and just stunning comics.
And look at them now.
Yeah, I haven't been there for a couple years now. But, you know, it was such a, like, it was just a build-up. It was like a couple years of this energy of, like, people doing this stuff and really no central.
Yeah, but what's so funny is that now, like, okay, so that energy, it's like everyone found out that they can do comics or something, but then this is what I'm saying is that, like, that doesn't translate to fucking Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. This is a boy, I hate to use the word apathetic to describe my hometown, but it isn't a... it is apathetic in a way.
But even people, like, even if there was a straight comics convention, yeah, like, this is the queer comics convention. But I mean, like, I just mean, like, if it was, like, a long box convention, when they have those, even those, aren't that well attended. Like, the people that go there are just total fanboys, which is fine. I'm just saying, like, there's no, you know, just because comics are popular and you keep reading that they are doesn't mean you're going to sell shit. You know, and especially in a town like this. I mean, like, this is what's so crazy. It's a great town to live and be a cartoonist and have low expenses and whatever. But there's more creators than there are fans here.
Yeah, it's like Portland, I guess, in that regard, except on a much, much, much tinier level. Because isn't that what you hear with Portland?
But not as good. Not the weed is not as good, I hear.
I think you're right. But that's what you hear about Portland, you know. What's her name? Erica Moan? Can't think of what her last name is, wrote that manifesto about don't move to Portland. You can't even get a job, like, you know, washing dishes in Portland because there are so many artists and cartoonists and stuff living there. And maybe that is what it is here. You have cartoonists but not necessarily an audience yet.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But you know, there are a number of good stores in the region. We talked about the library having pretty good resources. I feel like you have to build the audience a little.
Well, it's a great town to be, I mean, like, you know, it's a great town to be a student. You know, it's like, you know who I saw here at an art opening that the other night? I think she's going to grad school here. Is Erin Womack from the CCC, Closed Caption Comics. Yeah. Erin, she, you know, has a little bit of a CF style.
Where's she? She's going to school?
At CMU for painting.
Okay.
But where is she? She's not here. See? See? She's given up on comics, just like the rest of the closed caption kids. They've given up on comics. They're done. They're going the art route. They know there's more money in art. There's no money in comics. Except for when you draw Silver Surfer or Machine Man, right, Jim?
Yeah, I love Machine Man. I've been reading Cable.
Which Cable?
The 1992, the John Romita Jr., Dan Green Cable.
Wow. That's hardcore. Where'd you buy that? Phantom.
Yeah, they just brought it over to me.
If you're still listening, God bless you.
Yeah, I'll
see. We love you. Comics fans.
My 90, my period piece.
You're doing a... Oh, you're going to do a 90s period piece. Oh, well, you want to do a bit on Super Ape? I mean, US Ape? Super Ape, sorry.
I don't really have too much to say about that. It's still in development. Like, I've done a couple strips, you know, for... One's in study group, that new study group, and then a couple are in that newsprint anthology, Pood. But it's still a work in progress, you know what I mean? It just happens to be one that I'm putting out and people can look at if they're interested. But.
So it's similar to your aphrodisiac strategy where you just place things here and there and then eventually collect them?
No, I don't think the stuff that I'm doing on it right now is ever going to be collected because it's just the figure, the character's still kind of, I'm working on the character. It's not what it's going to end up being.
Hear that, True Believer? So you better buy your US Ape now. Buy your copies of Pood now because
it's
soon to be valuable. You're the cover of Pood number two. But they're going to send you copies for this one. You get your copies.
I got copies of this.
You did? I got copies.
Yeah, yeah.
Took a couple weeks though, right?
It did.
Okay. Just had to get that in there.
I like Jeff Grogan.
Just what I'm saying. You know, if you're gonna ask somebody to contribute to something, you know, you might want to get the contributor copies out pretty early. Just saying, because you know, you don't want the contributors to be hearing about the paper before they actually see it. So just saying, you know, just that's what I heard. You didn't say that to me, Jim, but you know, just that's what I heard.
I've been happy with those guys. I like Jeff Grogan a lot. I like his stuff. He did the Here Are Monsters or Here Come Monsters.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he did this other one. It's sort of a romance sci-fi. But it's that same format, oversized in color, and I like it better than the Monsters one.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He likes to make fun of me on his blog. Though,
oh,
so.
Does he really?
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, it's okay.
I've never met him.
That's okay. Huh. I think he's older.
Okay.
So he's making fun of the kids. You know, I mean, I like the way I make fun of the kids.
It's real funny because, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, so there's this generational thing. So it's always like, got to make fun of the kids.
Yeah, so. You guys should give them much more. You should have some kind of inner blog war.
Like, well, I did a kumbaya thing. You know, we made up. You know,
well, that's good.
Blogging made up. You know, because it's weird because you have these wars with people on the blogs and then you got to meet them. But that's okay.
I try to avoid all of that. It's so hard to talk online.
Yeah, well, you see, but what's funny.
To discuss.
Yeah, but then I talk to you privately. I know the way you really feel. See?
Oh, yeah. I'm an angry, bitter person.
But you got to let it out because, you know. But then, like, certain people, you know, I think it's your job to badger them and, you know, David Heatley, you know, you got to, like. I mean, that's illegal. You know, you got it, like, you know. Think about it. He duped Chris Ware, Dan Clowes, Gary Panter, all into giving blurbs for that fucking piece of shit book. Like, can you imagine? And then poor Blaze. I love Blaze Laramie's book, but why would you get David Heatley to do a blurb? Like, why? I don't understand. Like, why would you want David Heatley's blurb on your fucking book? I mean, that's the voice that you want. I mean, you know, Blaze's book is great. But the only thing, the only blemish on it is a David Heatley blurb. I'm sorry, that was a poor choice. I just have to say. But you know, I don't do blurbs. That's a thing. You know, Beto doesn't do blurbs. Because I tried to get a blurb out of Beto once, and he was like, "Yeah, I don't do blurbs." So it's just like, and I feel like I'll do it when I'm older. But I have a conflict because I can't be doing blurbs and then like talk about it on the blog and be like, you know, hey, this is a great book. You should check this out. You know. Because I'd be getting money under the table.
Do you think blurbs sell any books?
No. Do you think the Eisners sell any books?
No. The Eisners, all the awards in comics are really flawed.
Well, the thing is that I've decided I've never been nominated for anything in comics whatsoever. I'm a total nobody in terms of awards in comics. And if I've ever get one, I think because I'm so, I just think it's such bullshit. The Eisners, the Ignatzes, all this stuff is just a popularity contest. And that's fine, but it's just like for like you know when I see something like Eisner nominated, like it's so meaningless. Like it's so meaningless.
It's completely meaningless.
And if I ever get nominated, I am going to say no, thank you. Please nominate somebody else because I'm not going to put it on my fucking book anyway. And it's just like when you see these things, it's like 3-time Eisner winner. Like what is that? That just means like you know. I sold 1,000 copies.
Well, do you remember the couple, maybe 5-6 years ago, the Eisners, it was like for best, whatever their top award is, best graphic novel. I think it used to be it was like a combination trade paperback, reprint, and graphic novel was like the same group. You know, it was whatever had a spine, the best thing with a spine. Like maybe 2003, something like that. Whatever year it was, I think it was like Jimmy Corrigan was that year, I think. There were like 4 really good books. Like Klaus had a book that year. And the thing that ended up winning was a Batman animated collection.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
because... I mean, at that point, it's like, that's it. That's right. It's...
No, but it's because it's just like it's voted on by
it's inconceivable. Like, all the 4 books that were good either crossed out votes, you know, crossed out each other's vote. Whatever it is, like, however that happened, you have to change your rules. You have to, like, not give an award that year. I mean, like, that... It just completely ruins everything.
I totally agree.
Those are free. Please take them. It has, like, local...
And it's getting a little, there's more traffic here at the Pittsburgh International Comics Book Festival. And we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back with you later, True Believers. We'll pick up that story later, Jimmy.
I can tell more about awards. Here's the problem with awards.
Okay, we're not going to take a break.
What purpose do they serve? Like, is it for the industry? And if so, you know, like the Academy Awards are terrible, but in a way, people know what they're getting. If a movie's a Best Picture recipient or whatever, you kind of know what you're getting.
But don't you think they're reward shows? And I was, you know, I'm just riffing on Bill Maher. Like Bill Maher is always like, it's a reward show. Like, you know,
I'm just wondering, like, what function do they have? Like, it'd be good if you have a bunch of people that are lay people now interested in comics. It'd be good if there were some sort of a beacon where, like, okay, I'm interested in comics. I hear that they're not just for kids anymore. Where do I start? Isn't that what the awards?
Yeah,
like,
they could be.
But then you're right. They don't sell any books.
Well, but then, like, you know, what... Okay, am I right or am I right? Like, the Eisners are San Diego awards. What the fuck are the Harveys for? When do those come out?
They were in Baltimore. That's in Baltimore. They've been in Pittsburgh. They were at Mocha for a couple years.
Okay, but that's... And that's all the whole industry, but it's mostly mainstream stuff, right?
I think that's...
And then the Ignatzes is for...
I went to Harveys this year.
And then the Ignatzes is for alternative
SPX
stuff. Yeah.
Indie.
And then that's it, right? Eisner's Ignatz. So, you know, so it's basically like two awards for mainstream comics, one award. So Ignatz, if you got an Ignatz, that just means you're a alternative person. You get an Eisner nomination. Like, did Asterius Polyp win this year for Eisner? That was like...
I don't know what won.
Yeah.
I think it won in...
The real question is, does it matter? Who cares?
That's, yeah, I don't... I mean, it's so ludicrous that Asterius Polyp would be...
But then you get something like... But then, like, I think it was like there was an Eisner one year where, like, Nate Powell won...
Yeah, he won. Best,
and then, like, you know, he was there with his parents and, like, you know, like, that was the greatest thing ever because you're at fucking San Diego Con. So it's weird.
If I won one of those awards, I would... It would
oh,
I
yeah,
would, it would
be a huge... I know, but that's what's so fucked up is that, like, yeah, that's what you... You do want that. And then I think that's part of me is saying why I don't want that is, like, because I don't... You know, want to suffer the embarrassment of never getting nominated for anything I've ever done in my entire fucking life. I'm bitter. Right, Kevin? What do you say about being bitter, Kevin? How do you feel about that?
What?
How do you feel about bitter cartoonists?
It's kind of like redundant.
You want to rattle off the names of a few bitter cartoonists? Any friends of yours?
I don't know that I should say.
How's Dan Zetwalk to work with? Is Dan Zetwalk a good, you know, is he a good cartoonist buddy?
Yes, Dan is a good friend of mine, yes.
Is he bitter?
No, Dan is so excited about life. And
does he keep you youthful?
Dan's very well adjusted. Lots of good relationships in his life.
Good family background for, you know, he has no shame in being a cartoonist.
No, he's like a third generation artist. You know, these people, I always hear about these people whose parents were artists, and I'm always like, I feel like there's a fundamental difference between those kind of artists and us. Your parents weren't.
Yeah, my dad was an accountant.
Yeah, for us it's like, it's more complicated.
Very complicated.
Yeah.
How about Ted? What's Ted like?
Should be a different word for it.
Ted May. What's Ted May like? Give us some Ted May dirt.
Like a subscript after artist. Artist one, artist two.
No, wait. Ted May. Let's hear some Ted May gossip.
I don't know. Ted is a genius.
Is he bitter?
If he is, he doesn't show it.
But then he has a family now, right?
He has a baby girl now, yeah.
So just like, you know, I heard that Chris Ware was softened by having a child. Like, you know, he's not less bitter now. Chris is
softened.
He was soft boyed. He became gentler after his child. I heard. I mean, I shouldn't be saying this. Please forgive me. I do not want to be mentioning people's children. Do not comment on the blog about this. I'm just saying. I think sometimes having kids makes. Made Bill Boychel a better person. So Ted May, possibly a better person?
I couldn't comment on that. He's,
no comment.
He's already.
Let's talk about cartooning. Let's not talk about families.
You're going to talk about Photoshop filters.
Photoshop filters.
Like how does Jim get these old-timey effects of...
We've talked about that a million times. Nobody cares.
I haven't listened to those podcasts, so I haven't heard that. We can talk about this off the...
But what podcast did you do that on? Inkstuds or something?
I have no idea.
You didn't talk about your process? We could do a whole process post.
It's so boring.
People, it's fascinating. But you know, everyone's biting you now. You see, like, I see it all the time. Like, people are biting your coloring stuff.
I bit people.
No, I understand that. But you're... But, like, I think you have... Wait, Kevin's speaking...
You can't really call it biting when he's already doing, like, a pastiche of something that's older.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that now I see more people doing the pastiche thing, I think, because Jim pioneered the Photoshop look of old comics.
I think people have been doing that since Photoshop started. Photoshop had that filter that was, like, color halftone.
Jim, I'm serving you up a softball here. You're allowed to take credit for all this.
I invented old comics.
That's right. Jim invented coloring. Jim invented coloring. No comics. Well, if you're still listening, true believer, God bless you. Let me tell you, 34 minutes and we're still rolling here. Still rolling. There is. I'm going to count them off. You want to count customers or those are exhibitors? Okay, that is an exhibitor. That's an exhibitor. I think that fat guy over there is a customer.
In the red? Oh, and that
guy. And then you see some, you know, families. I'm counting 10 attendees. I'm going to put it at 10. I have an apple.
No, I mean.
Oh, man. I'm hungry, too. My stomach hurts. I told you, we should have went home and gotten stoned first. That would have made it way better. I can take the drive. I'll drive. It'll be about an hour. But I might get lost on the way back. Just kidding. Anyway, if you're still listening, here we are. It's like, you know what this is like? This is like, you know, when they have like a radio booth, and they're like, here we are down at the Regatta. Come on down to the Regatta.
Hey, Tom's selling a book to a girl.
Tom is selling a book to a female. A female Godland fan. Wearing a hat. Tattoo on the back of the neck. Nice boots. Boots, everybody. I said boots.
Cool belt.
Yeah. Striped shirt. Art School Confidential. De rigueur.
Yeah.
Striped shirt, funky hat.
One of Dan Klaus's.
I see an orange. Another tattoo coming from. Yeah, it's an orange.
Peach right on her hip.
A peach on her hip. Well, maybe. Yeah, good for Tom. He's got a customer.
That's
good.
She's buying
Godland. Unbelievable. I hope she doesn't listen to this later and realize we were talking about her. That would be terrible.
I don't think we said anything.
No, we didn't say anything. It just sounds bad. You're like listing off a woman's clothing. Like I feel like a. I mean, I do that in my mind all the time, but you know.
Wait till the next fellow comes by.
Maybe we can talk to. Right. I'll describe Sally Bloodbath's attire. That'll be fun. Yep. Potential customer. No customer. Pat Lewis is yucking it up. That's right. Well, we're having a play-by-play here. People are looking through my back issues, but I don't think there's any movement down there. Kevin's looking at Diamond Comics. He's going for the avant-garde. He's taking a look at that avant-garde stuff. Yep, he's loving it. So, Jim, what do you think about... What are we going to talk about at the panel? Making money? Making money. Making money, making money, making money, making money. Does anybody ever make money in comics? That's the real question. You sell anything yet, Chris Cornwell? Anything? Sales? Any sales?
No, but the name for the day down at the long boxes is Galassi.
Yeah, Galassi. I got a lot of good Galassi down there. I'm making deals. Making deals. You know, I really shored up the Galassi section, you know, because Ben Mara would always buy some at the show, but I think now he's filled in his whole Galassi back issue run, so I'm stuck with a lot of Galassis now. Uh-oh. We have a sale of Monster. Yep. Man, this is brutal. This is what it's like to live in Pittsburgh, ladies and gentlemen. This is Pittsburgh. All right, we're taking a commercial break. We'll be back with you shortly with a panel. Jim Rugg, Kevin Huizenga, Frank Santoro in conversation. Comics Weekend. Coming back right at you after these messages. And welcome back. Welcome back. Here we are at the Pittsburgh International Comics Festival with Genius or Ripoff, Bernie Wrightson?
Yeah.
Well, Bernie Wrightson completely ripped off all the EC guys, so his whole style... is a pastiche. He's, you know, arguably is now in the dustbin of history and has, you know, went from superstar to zero.
Even this cover, like the these frogs are a ripoff of National Lampoon. Like in the margins there would be these frogs that are on carts and have crutches and stuff like that. So that's like where he took that idea from.
Ed Piskor here, ladies and gentlemen. Ed Piskor.
Hi there.
Ed Piskor on the various biting techniques of Bernie Wrightson. So how do you feel about Wrightson in general, Eddie?
Well, as a kid, I really, really loved him. How do you feel? Like I don't have much of...
I was the biggest Wrightson fan, yeah.
Like that old stuff? fantastic. Now, the Angel Punisher stuff that he did not too long ago, I looked at it, never read it. Not too into it, man. I feel like
I saw him yell at a young child, you know, a kid of like 13 or 14 for having every single comic they ever did and wanting them signed at a convention. He did the, like, the William Shatner Star Trek freak out, like, don't you have a life? And, like, you know, like, belittled this kid for having, being a Wrightson fan. How do you feel about that, Ed?
Well, the interesting thing is he does that Pittsburgh con each year now, and nobody comes up. So I bet if things were flipped around.
You've seen him at the table with nobody coming up to the table.
He's easily available, and I bet he would be happy that somebody came up with all of his comics to get him signed just so that he had something to do. He could sign them with that broken wrist that is like...
Were you telling me the Margot Kidder story?
What Margot Kidder story?
Somebody was telling me a Margot Kidder story, like she came to the Pittsburgh con and...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I told you a story, but the plan was, did you ever see, there's this guy named Dick Troutman. He did this Christopher Reeve coloring book, and there was a kind of maze where you were supposed to take crazy Margot Kidder from home, from like under the guy's porch, you know, where she cut her hair off and pulled her teeth out and stuff. So the plan was to like slip that onto her table whenever she wasn't looking, but everybody chickened out on that.
Somebody told me a Margot Kidder story where like nobody came up to her table, and then they made this announcement like, Miss Kidder will only be signing for 5 more minutes, and then no one came up to the table, and she broke down in tears and rushed out of the exhibition hall.
She's not really mentally stable. Like I'm surprised she's still alive after that shit, man.
Let's see. No, you can swear us on the blog.
Okay, cool.
So Eddie Piskor, well, I call him Eddie, but Ed Piskor, cartoonist extraordinaire here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Later we'll be talking to Tom Scioli across the hall, but right now we're talking to Ed. Ed, how do you feel about this Pittsburgh International Comics Festival? I mean, Pittsburgh Independent Comics Festival.
It's really great to have a show in our backyard, at least. Like, I got to take a shower in my own bathroom and got to sleep in my own bed. And, you know,
no hotel costs.
Yeah, it's not even the hotel costs. It's like the hard water and stuff, man. It's like you're itchy afterwards and you never feel clean. And being clean is very...
So you can have a convention experience where you don't sell anything right in your own backyard instead of having to drive 500 miles to not sell anything, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm kind of here to hang out, it seems, man, because it doesn't seem like there's too many customers. But listen, man, I think there were like, what, maybe 100 people at the first Burning Man. So my hopes are high.
Well, yeah. Well, I remember going to Space a few years ago and, like, you know, there's nobody at Space, but then there's people that I met at Space a few years ago that I still see and still, you know, so it's almost like you're here for the other creators. You're not necessarily here, you know, here for community support. You're not here for, you know, the raging public, right?
Well, what do you think? Like, I mean, the nuclear stage of this show was kind of created 2 months ago, maybe. So, I mean, what do people expect? Like, my goal for this weekend is to make all of our foreign diplomats that have come in from far away happy and give them a good time and some sort of incentive for being here. Because, you know, I didn't expect it to be gangbusters. You're kind of dumb if you did, to be honest.
No, absolutely. I'm not trying to be an asshole, but it's like Bill Boy Show, who put the show on, from Copacetic Comics, one of my best friends. And I, you know, mean to support him in every way. I'm not trying to, you know, make fun of this whole situation. I'm just more making fun of Pittsburgh itself, because that's always the joke. Like, whether you have a band here, you know, the Cynics, Anti-Flag, Don Caballero, some of the biggest bands in alternative music from Pittsburgh. But do they have a following in Pittsburgh? No.
Yeah, that's I do find that to be really interesting. And it was weird because, you know, we sort of took Anti-Flag, when I was a kid, took Anti-Flag for granted in a way. It's like, all right, go to an Anti-Flag show. And it wasn't until I was at the Kubert School when kids were wearing Anti-Flag shirts.
The Joe Kubert School.
Right. And I saw other students with Anti-Flag shirts, and it gave me a sense of civic pride. Like, hey, man, those dudes are from Pittsburgh.
You feel that same pride with the Steelers football team, Ed?
What's that?
Okay, so you're not a Steelers fan. How about a Penguins fan?
No, who cares about sports?
Who cares about sports?
Yeah, I think that's the...
How can you live in a town like this? You have to care about sports just to stay out of everyone else's way.
Well, you know what, man? Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, the Steelers serve a certain function because, you know, I like my dad. I love him. And we have zero common ground. He would never, like, you know, he doesn't live far away. He's not going to come here and hang out. But what I can do in my part to bond with the guy is hang out with him, and you cheer for the guys that are wearing black and gold. You cheer against the guys in any other color. And it's kind of like, that's what I have to do.
And play some Smash Mouth football!
Yeah, it's what I have to do to relate to him on any level. And you know what? Like I sort of appreciate it for that. But I really...
That's a common theme here. We were talking earlier about difficult dads in comics. So that's a theme. Difficult dads in comics, right?
Well...
I'm not going to... You know, I'm not asking you to speak to, about your own dad. I'm just saying, like, you know, isn't that a thing? You know, that seems to be a common thing, you know?
Yeah, totally. Like I mean... We do this stuff for a reason, and some people, like maybe when they were kids, if you want to get into the psychological aspect, maybe when they would draw a picture, that would be the happiest, like, you know, they would see their dad when, you know, the greatest sense of affirmation when dad is like, hey, that's good. So it gives you, like, incentive to keep going and keep going. But then you get to the stage where you're showing them books, and, like, my pops thinks that my comic is called, like, Wizzy Wiz or something like that. Like, he doesn't exactly know what the name is, but he's like, has some sense of, like...
My mom calls Storyville Storytown.
Yeah, yeah.
How's Storytown doing, hun?
Yeah, sure, but they have it makes them happy, and then, you know, you had your city paper article, and your parents were probably extremely...
Oh, yeah, yeah, getting written up in the paper means more than the book itself, right?
My parents judge how well I'm doing by column inch.
Yeah, you've gotten some good column inches here in this town.
A little bit.
Oh, don't be modest. Eddie's like the poster child of Pittsburgh comic books. He's in the paper every other week here, ladies and gentlemen.
That's just because I have blackmail material on all those guys that work for that paper.
I thought it was because you were just you could bang out the cartoons when they need them, and you actually make deadlines, and so they toss you a bone. No.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm teasing. That's our Pittsburgh accents coming through. Oh, I'm teasing there. I'm just, you know.
We're here downtown.
We're downtown. There it is, Pittsburgh. This is how they talk in Pittsburgh. This is what they sound like usually. Usually you're talking like this. Yeah. So anyway, we're here with Ed Piskor. And anything, you want to leave the fans with anything? Any parting shots there, Ed?
Not really.
What do you got new coming out, Ed?
Just wrapping up that stupid WYSIWYG story I've been working on for so long. And I can't wait to get it over with. People could check it out online at WYSIWYGcomics.com. If that's this sort of pod, like, did I just encroach upon, like, this beautiful piece of art that you're doing by slipping a plug in?
No, that's the whole point. That's why I'm doing the comics weekend updates for the total True Believer fans that want to listen to 47 minutes of me and Jim and whoever else talking about bullshit.
Okay, that's beautiful. And you know what, man? I just saw not too long ago that little snippets from the Silver Surfer story. It's an is? Oh. Okay.
Here it is. The debut of the Silver Surfer Strange Tales. So we can have Eddie's audible reaction to seeing the Strange Tales right now. Here it goes, Eddie.
It's beautiful, Frankie.
Thank you, Eddie.
Are you happy?
I'm very happy. It wasn't printed upside down or anything.
Yeah, this is really great.
Yeah, it looks great. The best question I got so far was, did you do the colors on computer? No, I did not. I did strictly airbrush. All those little dots you see are airbrush.
Man, that's awesome.
All right, you, Eddie? So check out, give us your website one more time, Eddie.
Oh, it's WYSIWYGcomics.com. Just spell it the way it sounds.
WYSIWYG.com.
Bye-bye.